The nation's largest meat recall is quickly becoming its largest food recall as companies destroy any product that contains even the smallest amount of beef. So rest easy, Hot Pockets.
And hello, welcome back to My Life as a Foodie. You're not going to believe it, my wife is not here today, and her words were, and I'm going to quote, "You're on your own for dinner, eat what you like." These are her words. These are the times I'm going to pull out all the food that she would not dare eat. She wouldn't eat duck for the longest time because they were too cute. You know, she couldn't eat them. And then I finally got her to eat duck. I made duck confit, and all of a sudden, it's not an issue anymore. So duck's on the menu when I can get it. There's no rabbit allowed in this house because it reminds her of Thumper when she was a little girl. Venison? Oh, hell no. That's Bambi, and that's not allowed here. But tonight, Bambi is what's for dinner. Venison steak with pommes frites, or as I like to call it, Bambi with a side of fries. We're going to talk about that a little bit later. I was able to get some venison, a little strip steak of venison. I think it was a loin, and I've never had it before, so I don't know what to expect. So my first experience with venison will be on the show, and I'm going to do it in a classic French style, like steak frites. I'm going to do it like that with French fries. So I wanted to, first of all, thank everybody who chimed in on the blog at zeroface.wordpress.com. Everybody who commented on the interview with Sean from last episode, I wanted to say thank you for that. It was really fun to have him in here. We've not had a guest on before, so it was kind of fun. I'm going to have him back on next episode. He wants to talk more about farming and his experiences in actually raising livestock, and he says he's going to get a little bit more detailed next time, so beware for that. There were quite a few debates that were going on back and forth about the validity of some of his statements, some of the statements that he made. So he certainly stands behind those statements. I stand behind him. And if I did have any reservations about anything that we said on the show, all I really had to do was dig a little bit deeper, because over the weekend, the New York Times ran an editorial piece by Jack Hedden, who is a farmer in the Midwest. He explains how the government actively prohibits small farmers from growing fruits and vegetables so we don't waste valuable land where subsidized crops might grow. It's no news to us, of course, all right, but it still sucks. I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but it does still suck, and I'm not going to stop being an advocate for small farmers. I really hope that you will help me spread the word just a little bit. People really need to know the ways that our Department of Agriculture in this country are penalizing the small farmer. They reduce the amount of good food and the good stuff that these farmers can grow, and in the meantime, they elevate the price of what's available, so we pay more. The link to this story is absolutely ridiculous, so I'm not going to try to post it. I can't rattle it off, but check it out on the blog. I'll post a link to it, zeroface.wordpress.com, and there's more for you there, so check that out. Give it a good read. We're having a beer with dinner tonight, and it is yet another gift from one of our Beer Safari podcast friends. It's called Insanity from Weyerbacher in Easton, Pennsylvania. It comes courtesy of Sick Puppy at Should I Drink That? ShouldIDrinkThat.com. Check out the new website they have. It's really spiffy. Father Spoon does a great job with that. The beer is a barley wine, and I've not had venison before, so you know I figured, oh, wine would go good with it, right? But I wanted beer, so you know why not a barley wine? Because that's about as close as you can come to wine, really, with a beer. So if you've not really tasted barley wine before, I'll kind of give you a description. You can imagine a beer that's really strong, all right, higher alcohol, and really heavy. Imagine that, and then while you're drinking it, imagine someone's taking a cinder block and smashing your face in real hard with it. That's what a barley wine is. It's rich. It's in your face. It's got a lot of flavor. It's really high in alcohol. This particular beer is 11% alcohol, so you know it's not like a regular beer that you would put in a pint glass and drink. They're really strong beers. They have a load of hops, a load of malt, They allow them to mature for a long period of time, a couple years. This one is actually aged in oak bourbon casks. It's pretty cool. This beer that I'm going to have has been sitting around for a while. It's been in my beer cellar. Yes, yeah, I have a beer cellar. It's been there for about 2 years, maybe longer. The beer was actually released in November of 2004. So, yeah, it's been over 3 years. I got it. He sent it to us for due night, and then we never got to it. So, you know, I've been taking out all the old archive beers and having them on the show. So this was next on the list. I imagine it's got to be peaking right about now, 3 years old. So I'm going to pour it in a goblet. I'm going to get a goblet here. Of course, you know, I'm sorry if it sounds fruity or stuck up, but a beer like this, you don't want it in a pint glass, all right? Like I've said it before, you appreciate these beers. Beers like this have a lot of character and a lot of style. You don't want to, you know, just have them like you would a normal beer. Have it in a brandy snifter or a goblet, a Belgian beer glass works perfectly. It's a fine beverage. This should be enjoyed with patience and care, and the best way to enjoy it, appreciate it, is in a nice goblet. Unlike a lot of the beers I've had lately on the show, this one actually has a cap on it. Okay. And we shall pour. It's dark. Ooh, look at that color. Well, it's dark red, like a dark brown ale. It's kind of translucent. You can see through it a little bit. Nice head on it. Smells like it's got a ton of sugar, a lot of plum flavors. Kind of a Belgian quality, something that you would normally associate with a strong beer. Oh, my life. Oh, some sugar in there. Oof, phenomenal. Well, as my ex-podcasting mate used to say, you better respect that one. My goodness, that is something else. Okay, well, while I'm preparing to blow my brains out with this strong beer, it is so good. Man alive, there's some flavors going on. I'll read something off their website. It said, Beer Advocate is listed on the top 50 American barley wines. It's made by aging a perfectly balanced Blithering Idiot barley wine in oak bourbon casks. So I guess this is actually Blithering Idiot, and then they age it in oak bourbon casks, and that's the difference. Creates a blend of flavors like malt, dates, oak, vanilla, and bourbon. Oh, man, it's getting me right in the chest. It's like drinking scotch. Holy crap. Listen, I'm going to play something for you guys because I think it's funny. I don't think it's funny because it's not funny. I thought it was interesting. Just to be fair, because I don't want to, you know, act like I'm just beating up on everybody because I'm not. NAFTA is not just hurting the U.S. I mean, that's unfair to a lot of people, including and especially Mexican farmers. Listen to this.
A burning tractor in Mexico City's Plaza of the Revolution, part of a last-ditch effort by Mexican farm workers who say their livelihoods are going up in smoke. Hundreds of thousands of them gathered in the capital to protest the entry of cheap, subsidized grains from the United States and Canada into the Mexican market, courtesy of the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA. Some want Mexico to renegotiate the terms of the wide-sweeping 1994 agreement. Others say a little concern for Mexican farmers would be enough.
The NAFTA agreement is in place, and that's that. But all producers should be under equal conditions, and as Mexicans, we are not working under the same terms as our neighbors up north.
Mexican farmers argue that under NAFTA, they face unfair competition from U.S. farmers who enjoy much heavier government subsidies than they get.
NAFTA is very bad for Mexican people, for Mexican consumers, and for Mexican producers.
Ramon Garcia, who grows corn near Mexico City, says he couldn't afford to fertilize it this year. He had to rent a tractor to till his arid field. Too much effort, he says, for a crop that brings in little cash.
El maíz está muy barato.
Corn is too cheap. For me to make a profit, it has to bring in 15 pesos a kilo, and I can barely get 10.
Farmers say their pleas for help have fallen on deaf ears, taking to the streets their only option.
The government says it will talk to the farmers about finding ways to increase its support for them after they clear city streets. but it insists renegotiating NAFTA is out of the question.
And it argues since subsidized grains appeared on the Mexican market in January, prices have been stable. Stable, but too low for many farmers, who say poverty on the farms is pushing more would-be migrants to look for work in the United States.
So, brutal, right? I mean, I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but free trade is kind of a non-existent thing, really. It's not fair here, and it's not fair there. So, you know, we need to work on that quite a bit. Oh, and just in case you needed another reason to hit the farmer's market for your produce, again, try not to beat a dead horse here, but this clip from CNN was so good, I just had to play it. It's a clip about rising food costs. Listen to this.
Consumers trying to save money with food prices skyrocketing.
I used to spend about $100 a week. It's now going up $120, $130.
In just over a year, milk prices have gone up more than 17%, eggs nearly 35%, bread almost 6%. And with wheat spiking over $12 a bushel, Garden of Eden supermarket manager Juan Lario says bread prices continue to rise. This challah loaf cost $4 last year.
And where do you think it's going?
It's going to go to $5.49 starting as of next week.
Why? With the dollar near historic lows, it costs more to import the fruits and vegetables people like to eat year-round. Higher fuel prices mean farming and shipping cost more. And with more corn being used to produce ethanol, cattle cost more to feed, which means the price of milk is up too.
This costs $3.49. About a year ago, it was down to $2.99, $2.79.
Food price inflation suggests more problems for an already slowing economy.
People have to eat, they have to drive to work, they have to heat their homes. So they're not going to be cutting back on food and energy. As those food and energy costs go up, the amount of money they have to spend on more optional items declines.
Okay. I mean, a lot of, you can say, Phil, that's propaganda, but you can't deny food definitely costs more. All right. So we're all facing a financial crunch. It may not affect all of you. Some of you might be better off than others. And, you know, everyone's got a budget. But you should know that, you know, if there is a budget for your food, you should know that the farmer's market, in some cases specialty markets like Henry's or Trader Joe's, are a cheaper alternative. So, you know, the farmer's market definitely is. Every Saturday when we're there, there'll always be that one thing I decide to buy, and it will be unbelievably cheap. I'm like, what? Really? A dollar? Is that it? I mean, I'm shocked. Last week, we bought two of the longest, prettiest, most gorgeous leeks I have ever seen in any store ever. They were $1 for both of them. I made a huge pot of potato leek soup for about $1.20. I was beside myself. If I had purchased those leeks in a grocery store or another market, I'd have paid at least twice that amount. Trust me, we don't have a real budget for food because we don't really put a price tag on it. I mean, if that's going to be our biggest expense, well, that's just how it's going to be. But it never really is. We eat well, but it doesn't cost us a lot to do it. I don't know if it's, you know, it has a lot to do with the farmer's market or just how we eat, but we're certainly saving quite a bit of money doing it this way. I really appreciated CNN for doing that. It's great that they ran that story. And, you know, a lot of people are going to think, oh, it's propaganda, but gas prices are going up, man. The price of oil is affecting everything. And it's kind of we're in a squeeze here right now, so kind of tough. Oh, here's something else, man. I'm catching up. You can tell I've got a lot of stuff to talk about. The Germans, I love the Germans. I've always had an affection for them. They think of everything. They've given us so many great things. The hot dog, the Autobahn, Kraftwerk, Hefeweizen, the Porsche. Okay, do I need to go on? I can continue. All of that was nothing. Listen to this. They've reached the heights of their inventiveness with this. It's a cheeseburger in a can. All right, it's maybe the coolest thing I've ever seen and the worst idea I've ever heard of. It's really, I mean, I'll post a link again. I'll post a link because this link is ridiculous. I can't even try this one. I'm not making it up. I guess it's for campers because campers eat food in cans like beans and crap like that. I don't know, maybe. I know things get desperate when you're in the woods, you know, and you get hungry, but a cheeseburger in a can, that is asking for botulism. But it's still pretty cool. I mean, it looks great. And if I was out in the woods, I was hungry, and it was between eating this and eating my feet, well, hold my shoes, will you? Seriously, dude. I'm not eating that. Well, anyway, check that out, too. I'll put a link to that there. What else? Oh, yeah, I got this article that came out. Oh, this is pretty cool. This is a this is really interesting. I guess they're doing, these Japanese restaurants are all invited to be checked for authentication. They're going to win the approval of a sushi squad. These officials that are in Tokyo, they're offering a worldwide authenticity screen for restaurants that claim to be Japanese. Okay? So all the Japanese restaurants throughout the world are going to be, or they all have to participate, but they, you know, if they want to be part of this program, they can be. It's going to kind of be like a Michelin star system for Japanese restaurants throughout the world. The kitchens of all the restaurants are going to be visited by these teams of experts that are run by Japan's Ministry of Agriculture, and they're going to assess the ingredients and how far they actually, you know, represent the real taste of Japan. Because, and I didn't know this before I read the article, but the origins of wasabi horseradish, for example, are from the Aizu Peninsula. Miso paste should come from Nagano Mountains, because that's where it originated from. You know, pickled ginger, you know the stuff that you find in the little deli section, the pink sliced ginger? That is preferably from Tochigi. All of that is going to be scrutinized. Rice is one of the things that they think will blow everyone out. I mean, a lot of people won't get the stars because rice is going to be one of those things where they're going to fail the most. A true sushi master will insist on Japanese Koshihikari rice. Did I say that right? Koshihikari. I think I did. Anyway, that's grown in Japan, and they do grow a variety of that here in California, and they said that might be acceptable, but they're looking for things that are real, like, showstoppers, like major faux pas, like serving Chinese soy sauce or miso soup in a porcelain cup. You know, those are things that they'll really nail you for. So they're real sticklers for this stuff because, you know, it's a lot about tradition, and they're trying to promote Japanese food and the health benefits of Japanese food, but they don't want people to think that they're being, you know, policed. So, you know, they're not going to badmouth the restaurants that don't make the cut, and they're not going to call them out for being fakes. They're just going to award the seal of authenticity to the restaurants that provide high-quality Japanese food. So you know you're getting really authentic Japanese food. They think it's going to be helpful to people who are drawn to the food by the health benefits that the food provides, because they kind of depend on the genuineness of the ingredients, especially things like fish and tofu, stuff like that. It's no secret that the life expectancy of Japanese is really high. You know, ultimately, I think people are drawn to that because of the life expectancy of Japanese people. The inspectors are already in Bangkok, Shanghai, and Taipei, and this year they'll arrive in London, Amsterdam, Los Angeles, and Paris. Not New York, I guess, but that's coming. Anyway, that should get interesting. I think it'll be fun. It's about time, too, for them. I think, if anything, it's going to raise the price of that food when you go out, because they're going to have these stars, you know. It'll be, you know, interesting to see what happens after that. Oh, and one of my favorite shows on TV, Top Chef, is making its comeback next week. It's coming back. Season 4 of Top Chef is going to start on March 14th on Bravo. Hopefully you get that. It's in Chicago this year. There's 16 new chefs. Same thing, same rules, same everything. They're going to compete to win $100,000 and the same stuff they always compete for. I did hear something really strange. I don't even know why they had to say it, but Bravo made an announcement that there are no openly gay men on the show this season. And why make that an issue? I don't know, but whatever. Ted Allen is going to be back as a judge. There are lesbian contestants, they said. But that's it. No other openly gay people on the show. Now, why they have to mention this, it's beyond me, but, you know, it does keep my wife coming back every week. Anyway, gay-free season 4 of Top Chef, March 14th. It's good. It'll be good to have something to watch on TV because that writer strike sucked, dude. I mean, that really sucked the life out of TV. I ended up watching nothing. Well, thank God it was football, but after that, it was kind of, you know, and baseball's coming, but the writers are back, so it'll be fun. Anyway, check it out on Bravo. So what else do I have? I think I'll take some more beer. This is good. And we got to get cooking. It's going to get late on me. Some other stuff I wasn't able to get to. Oh, man, Food Network has become a serious train wreck. And I knew it was bad, but it's getting really bad. I read that they're picking off editors from the magazine, Rachel Ray's magazine, Every Day with Rachel Ray. They're going to start their own magazine, Food Network Magazine. Now, that sounds just stupid because, you know, they're going to have the same people on the cover every month. You're going to have Paula Deen, Giddy Contessa, and that Italian chick with the big tits. Can't even remember her name right now, anyway. If that's not bad enough, man. I heard a rumor that they're going to sell it exclusively at Walmart. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but that's what I heard. If that is true, that would be like the final nail in the coffin. Let me just pound them all in there. Food Network would be done, dude. And the only place you could get this magazine, imagine if the only place you can get it was at the same store that sold underpants for kids, you know, decorated with NASCAR emblems and stuff. I think I'd kind of have to distance myself from that. And now, you know, you can begin to understand Tony Bourdain's absolute disdain for the network and the entire idea of it. And here they are still showing his show. Oh, man, it's just, that's pathetic. They did some other crap, too. They didn't re-sign the Godfather, Emeril Lagasse. He's gone. And who picks up his show? Martha Stewart. Martha Stewart Omnimedia bought all of his shows, bought his books, bought everything. She didn't buy his restaurants, but she bought everything else. They don't even retain the rights to those shows. Like, they show reruns of Multimario and stuff like that. No, she owns them all, so she takes it all with her. So he's gone. Mario's gone. Tony's gone. Any real chefs or cooks left on that network besides Flay? That's it, right? If I were Bobby Flay, I'd be getting the hell out of there quick. Oh, and if that's not enough, they did something else. That dude, Robert Irvine, who does the show Dinner Impossible, or Tony says it's Dinner Slightly Difficult. Well, I think it's fun. I mean, I like his show. I mean, the few times I've seen it, I thought it was pretty entertaining. Turns out he lied about his past. Big deal. Father Spoon, Should I Drink That? He met the guy at some food expo, said he was one of the nicest, most approachable guys he'd ever seen, ever met. Very nice guy. He said he did some things he didn't really do. He doesn't have the experience he said he had. He hadn't done half the things he claimed that helped him get the job. Food Network cancels the contract with him, throws him off the network. They even took his bio off their website. And then the Home Shopping Network catches wind of this. They were selling a new line of cooking stuff, or the new cooking equipment. They took all that off, fired him. The guy's toast. He's done. And I don't get it. The guy can cook. He can run a kitchen, kind of. I mean, he yells a lot, but who doesn't in a kitchen? On top of that, I think the show kind of does well for the network. So, at least from what I hear, you know, what's the problem? So he lied about his past. Big deal. Our president lied about his past. They didn't impeach him. If he's bringing in the ratings, what's the problem? The problem is Food Network, man. That's the problem. This thing is coming up. Rachel Ray cooks for her pets. Did you hear about this? I'm gonna take such a piss on that show when it comes out. What the fuck happened to this? It used to be cool. Food Network's a joke now. Ugh, more beer. That's what I need. I don't want to hate, you know, but don't screw with it. It's like, you know, Depeche Mode was good for a long time. They could have kept making techno pop for years. Now they had to pick up some guitars. Now they suck. All right, let's talk about some food. I'm getting hungry. Bambi with a side of fries. So here's what happened. I went to a German market with my wife. I found venison. They had venison there. And I said, this looks good. And she looks at me and she goes, okay, go ahead. Because she knows now I have to have it all. I have to try everything. I thought, oh, a breakthrough. I'm going to have venison. So I got this. It looks like a New York steak here. It looks like a New York steak. And I took it out of the wrapper. And it was bloody and dark. And it looked kind of like liver. But it was like, it was a cross between liver and a New York strip without the marbling. It had no fat in it. I mean, seriously, nothing. And a little tiny bone across the top. I've decided to just put a little salt and pepper on there and a couple drops of Worcestershire sauce. And I'm going to grill it because the best way I figure I could, you know, make this is to grill it, because that's what I do with all my meat. Since the strip steak kind of looks like a New York steak, I figured what a better way. So that's what I've done. It's been sitting around for an hour, and I'm placing it on the grill and see how it pairs with the insanity. So we'll go ahead and stick that in the grill and get working on our frites. Now, these are French fries, all right? Pommes frites are a fancy way of saying French fry, which I kind of find odd anyway, because they actually came from Belgium, not France, but whatever, all right? There's a trick to making really authentic fries, and I swear to you, if you follow my lead on this, you're going to love eating this. You're going to love making them. You're going to want them all the time. The first thing you want to do is make sure that you get the right potato. The best potato for this is the russet potato, which is also known as the Idaho potato. It's not the short, stubby, round Yukon Golds or boiling potatoes that you find in 5-pound bags of the bulk potatoes at the market. You want to buy these individually. They're long and thick. You buy each potato, peel them, slice them into half-inch sheets, and then slice those into half-inch pieces. So what you're left with is a long half-inch by half-inch stick. Now, the oil is another key. You want to use peanut oil if you can get it, all right? If you can get peanut oil, that's the best. If you can't get it, not a problem. You can use vegetable oil or corn oil. I prefer peanut oil. If you can find it, get it. It's great stuff. You're not going to make bad fries if you don't use it, but it's good if you can find it. The other key is blanching. If you don't blanch your fries, you're going to end up with soggy, limp potatoes. Now, these fries that we're going to make are not going to look like they need Viagra, all right? They're going to be crispy and stiff, and the key to making them crispy and stiff is to blanch them, then to fry them a second time to finish them off at a higher temperature. So the first thing you want to do is heat your oil to 280 degrees, and then add a handful of the raw-cut fries right in the oil. Now you want them to cook for about 6 minutes until they've gone from the raw white color to almost a translucent white. So you don't want them to take on any brown. You just want them to go from like white to almost translucent. And we'll take them out with a strainer or a wire basket and then place them on a baking sheet. Give them about 15 minutes, at least 15 minutes of rest. They can rest for longer, but at least 15 minutes. So you want them to completely kind of settle. Now we'll raise the oil back to 375 degrees. Now this is key. You don't want it lower than 375, and you don't want it higher. You want it exactly 375. We're going to add the blanched fries in batches for another 2 to 3 minutes until they're golden brown and crispy. Now when we remove them here, we're going to shake off as much of the excess oil as possible. We're going to place them in a bowl lined with a towel, and then give them a generous dose of salt. Just crack as much sea salt as you can on there. You can't oversalt these, really. Just give it a good dose. It's imperative that you salt them right after they come out of the oil, because that's when they're going to take in all that salt. And another nice trick is to take some fresh rosemary that you crush almost into a powder. Just dice the crap out of it into a small powder. Sprinkle some of that onto the fries, too. Really helps the flavor. Potatoes love salt and rosemary. They just kind of marry with each other very, very well. You want to serve these as quickly as you can, so timing is really the key. The longer they sit around, you know, the soggier they're going to get. I've made a little bit of a sauce here, kind of a brown sauce with some mushrooms, and I'm going to pour that across the top. I'm going to see how this goes with the insanity, so let me go ahead and get this here, and I'll take a bite. And through the magic of podcasting, my food is done. One thing I realize is I've not eaten on the show yet, so this is going to be a first for me. I'm going to dig into the venison first. It's a good color. It's slightly red, so I didn't overcook it, because I didn't want to dry it out. I eat my beef usually medium rare. Oh, this is great. I know it's rude to eat on mic, so I'm not going to do it. This tastes like a cross between filet mignon with a bit more liver. It's exactly what it tastes like. It tastes like filet mignon and liver, which is kind of funny because filet mignon is close to the liver, so it has more of a liver taste. The tenderloin is near the liver, so that's why that has that flavor, and usually I have to pour sauce on it, which is why I did it to this. But it doesn't need it when the fries are great. We'll see how it pairs with the insanity. Oh, my God, that's perfect. Wow. Okay, look, I don't want to be rude. I'm going to sit here and eat. I'm going to finish my meal. You guys have a great day. Thanks for joining me. Next week, it's Sean again. He's going to return. He's going to ruin your appetite, so don't eat before or after you listen to the show. Make it your fasting day. Hopefully, things will go well. All right. Thanks again for joining me. My name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie. We'll see you guys next time. Ciao.
Thank you.